You're listening to Civic from the San Francisco Public Press. On this edition, we'll get an update on the situation at the Employment Development Department, which has been struggling to clear backlogged cases and manage fraud.
Claims that have been backlogged more than 21 days because of EDD, that number has been growing each week, even as the number of claims that claimants need to certify has been decreasing. So to put that another way, the backlog is growing because of EDD inaction. That signals that things are going in the wrong direction because, again, like, things are reopening in California. People should be going back to work. But actually, like, the amount of people who are filing new unemployment claims is increasing, and so is the number of claims that have yet to be processed.
I'm Laura Wenis, and this is Civic. Before we get started, at the Public Press, which is Civic's parent organization, we've been working really hard during this pandemic to pursue angles we're not seeing much coverage of elsewhere, or to take a more systemic look at the issues that are surfacing in the headlines. The San Francisco Public Press is a nonprofit, and we're inspired by the public radio model. That's the idea that people who are able to support the work that we do so everyone can have access to it without paywalls or ads. If you think we're onto something, we'd very much appreciate if you could show your support. You can do that by going to sfpublicpress.org/donate or by helping us get the word out about this show. Subscribe on whichever podcast platform you use or leave us a review. It really does help. So thanks. California is likely to reopen on June 15th, but it's probably going to take more than a reopening for the state to bounce back from the economic fallout of the pandemic. As we'll talk about today, unemployment is holding fairly steady. And jobs are being added, but people are also dropping out of the workforce entirely. And the state's Employment Development Department, which handles unemployment claims, is still working on a mountain of backlogged cases and battling fraud. Emily Hoven, who writes the daily What Matters newsletter for the nonprofit newsroom Cal Matters, is back with the latest on how the state is handling unemployment. Thanks for coming back to talk about this again.
Of course, there's always a lot to talk about.
Yes, and it is apparently looking mixed on the unemployment front in California. You wrote recently that California's unemployment rate remained unchanged between March and April. It's about 8.3%, even though employers added nearly 102,000 jobs. That's according to figures from the Employment Development Department. But the state has regained only 48% of jobs lost amid the pandemic. Can you put that into context for us? Why is the unemployment rate holding steady even though jobs are opening up?
Yeah, so what seems to be happening is that there are a lot of open jobs. I mean, as the state is reopening, restaurants are reopening, hotels, retail stores, people are trying to hire, you know, to fill those positions. But people are not applying for those jobs. And, you know, there's a lot of different possible reasons for why that's happening. You know, I posted that recent newsletter on Twitter, and I got an absolutely insane level of response to it. I think like hundreds of people were commenting. And the main thing that I gleaned from that was that a lot of people feel like those jobs don't pay me enough to live in California. Mm. You know, working at a restaurant, working at a retail store, I'm, you know, minimum wage, that's not going to be enough to get me an apartment in San Francisco or Los Angeles. For me, it's evident there's a lot of feeling that California is not paying its workers enough for them to live here. And so, yeah, there may be jobs opened, but it may not even really help those people that are looking for jobs. And then, you know, there is also the other side of that coin. And this is something that I think, you know, a lot of Republican politicians have kind of been hammering home, is this anxiety of, oh, you know, are people making more on unemployment than they would at a minimum wage job? And so there's a lot of sort of things that are interrelated. And then there's people that have just left the workforce entirely, you know, primarily women, with schools closing, childcare centers closing. A lot of women have felt that they, you know, need to stay home and take care of their kids and, you know, guide them through distance learning. And so it's unclear what it will take to get those people back into the workforce. And, you know, there's concerns that people had about, you know, going back and potentially getting sick, getting the virus, passing it to their families. And so all of these interrelated factors, I think, contribute to the fact that there are jobs opening, but people just either don't feel able or it's not going to be enough for them to go back into that workforce.
There are two important factors there that I want to zero in on, and I guess I'll go to wages first. This argument that people are making more on unemployment than they would at a job, that seems kind of like then the answer would be then jobs need to pay more because unemployment is not necessarily enough for people to like, I mean, it doesn't seem like it's comfortable. I have a job currently, so I don't know, but what do business owners say about that? I mean, like if people are saying, you know, pay your potential employees more, then what do they say to that?
Right. I mean, so it's interesting, you know, there's this restaurant owner in San Francisco and she was saying, okay, yeah, I mean, I totally agree that people need to make more, but then that means I'm going to have to, you know, raise the prices of the food that I serve and our customers actually going to be willing to pay those prices. And so it's really just, you know, who's going to be shouldering these costs, you know, is it going to be the consumer? Is it going to be the business owner? And so it just kind of becomes this everyone's in a circle sitting around looking at who should be, you know, shouldering this burden. When it comes to what businesses can and can't do, you know, if they're going to raise, there's going to be a lot of pushback from businesses on things like that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to, you know, California already was raising its minimum wage to $15 an hour, I believe, starting next year. But things like that are very controversial because lawmakers are backed by some of these business groups that may not necessarily want to shoulder those costs. And you saw in some parts of the state when different like grocery stores were adding this hero pay for workers during the pandemic, they shut down some of those stores after cities passed local ordinances to raise those wages. And so I do think it's related, you know, it's just sort of, it's trying to disentangle who's going to pay for what.
Right. Yeah. And then the other thing you mentioned is people dropping out of the workforce entirely. And I just want to make that link super clear that you brought up already between childcare and people dropping out of the workforce. And, you know, I guess unsurprisingly, this is disproportionately women, but how disparate are those proportions?
Yeah, I mean, there was a survey, I believe I cited in one of my newsletters a while back, where, you know, they asked California men and women, what's it been like working from home? A clear majority of men were like, oh yeah, it's been beneficial to my career. I've been promoted. And for, you know, the vast majority of women, it was like, well, it hasn't necessarily been beneficial for my career because, you know, maybe they were at home and they had to, you know, they were shouldering the majority of supervising the kids, you know, who knows what it is. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that it's a very clear connection, and it's something that the governor has also, you know, really been underlining in a lot of his recent proposals. He wants to create 100,000 new childcare slots in California as a way to sort of address that problem. But actually just a couple days ago or yesterday, a bipartisan group of 28 lawmakers, both Republicans and Democrats, they sent the governor a letter and they were like, that plan is completely ill-advised because it doesn't address the fact that childcare providers who are disproportionately women of color are not making a living wage. So we're back to the wage issue. So they're basically saying, we want you to include in your proposal this reimbursement rate reform to ensure that these providers are paid more, because their argument is you want to create more slots, you want to create more work for these providers, but their wages are not going to change. It's crazy, but literally all of these things are related. And it's just, yeah, it's kind of the scope of the problem is kind of staggering.
Yeah. Yeah. And it seems to me that there are two major problems when it comes to EDD, the backlog of claims and then fraudulent claims. Just, you know, zeroing in on EDD specifically now, moving past unemployment in general.
Yeah.
And looking at the backlog, you reported that on May 8th, nearly 196,000 claims had been on EDD's desk for more than 21 days, which was a jump from 166,000 the week before and 135,000 the week before that. Claimants had to call the department 12.6 times on average last week to get through, well, that last week meaning the week before May 8th, up from 12.2 times the week before. That sounds bad, but also it sounds better than February and better than earlier this month when the backlog had contained more than a million claims for 13 straight weeks. So how would you say the EDD is doing on the backlog front?
The math around the backlog is kind of confusing. And so to break down, to kind of clarify the change in those numbers, basically the state auditor a while back went into EDD and made a bunch of recommendations for things that they should do to just address the problems that they have. And one of the recommendations was to clarify what counts as a backlog. And so what EDD has done is it has divided its claims into two categories. So one category is claims that have been backlogged for more than 21 days pending action from EDD. And then there's another category of claims that are said to be pending claimant action, which usually means the jobless person themselves needs to go in and certify that claim for EDD to process it. Mm. However, they also have a separate document that shows that of the claims for which EDD actually has received the claimant certification, hundreds of thousands of those are still actually pending EDD action. I don't know if that makes sense. It basically, like, more claims are pending EDD action than it appears. Mm. So the 196,000 figure from May 8th, that doesn't include the other claims that claimants have certified, but EDD is still processing. So it's less than a million, but it's still larger than the amount that it says. Sort of going into that a little bit deeper, the first category, so the claims that have been backlogged more than 21 days because of EDD, that number has been growing each week, even as the number of claims that claimants need to certify has been decreasing. So to put that another way, the backlog is growing because of the EDD inaction, basically. That signals that things are going in the wrong direction because, again, like, things are reopening in California. People should be going back to work, but actually, like, the amount of people who are filing new unemployment claims is increasing, and so is the number of claims that are that have yet to be processed. It's just crazy. I mean, the emails I get whenever I write about EDD, my inbox is just full of people. I mean, so I wrote last week that claimants had to call 12.6 times on average. A woman emailed me and she said, "I don't know where you got that number from." It was from the EDD website, but she's like, "My son called 280 times and did not get through one time."
Well, okay. I mean, it's an average, so that's where you got that number from. But still, that is astounding. Right. That is a huge number of times to have to be on the phone with somebody to get answers. And this is not about trifling stuff, right? Like, people are calling to figure out if they're going to be able to pay their bills.
Right. And you have lawmakers. I mean, there was a recent hearing where they were talking about the worsening backlog. And it was interesting because lawmakers, you know, they've been hounding EDD for over a year now about their problems. They're sympathetic for the director because I think they know it is kind of, in a way, it's an impossible task. I mean, they're operating with a technology system that is like 40 years old at least. Yeah. And they were kind of, they had poor infrastructure to work with, you know. But at the same time, the lawmakers are upset because it's like, hey, our constituents, some of them are threatening suicide. Some of them have moved into their cars. Mm-hmm. Some of them are homeless because they are not able to get this most basic government service. Yeah. I do think that out of all the things in the pandemic, you know, most outlooks are improving, but EDD is, I think, the anomaly in where things are actually getting worse. That's disturbing because the department has hired hundreds of new workers and the governor is proposing, you know, infusing hundreds of millions of dollars into EDD. But it's sort of unclear if that's really going to make a difference because they've had that, you know, they've been hiring like crazy and things are going in the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of hearings, I seem to recall that your reporting was cited at one of these hearings. Do you want to talk about how your reporting has come up in in conversations and attempts to improve the situation?
Yeah, so I have taken an interest in this backlog, which is and like the weird definition surrounding it and whatnot. And so actually, a while ago, I started keeping a thread on Twitter where every single week I would go in there and I would update the number of backlogged claims. Mm-hmm. And I just kept this running thread. And then I usually will also write something once a week in the newsletter when those numbers come out. And so at this recent legislative hearing on EDD, one of the lawmakers is Senator Shannon Grove. She's a Republican and she's a former Republican Senate leader. She basically said to EDD, "You're saying the backlog of claims is going down," because they were citing that overall number that includes the claimant number. She said that reporting from CalMatters shows that the number of claims that EDD specifically needs to address is getting larger, which is the part that EDD can control, right? That's sort of how that came up. And then EDD did say, yes, you are right. The number of claims that we have yet to resolve is growing larger. And they said that as a result of that question, they said 95% of those backlogged claims are like pending determination, which means it's like it's people that have already like gone through the process, but they have to like re-verify their identity and just make sure that they are who they say they are. So there's just all these like different steps that are going on in the background that are just really, you know, adding time onto people's ability to get their checks.
Yeah. And you did mention that EDD had hired hundreds of people, but I was also reading in some of your reporting that the employee turnover rate in the EDD's call centers is 30%. Like 30%. That, I mean, how are you going to staff up when your turnover rate is that high? Do you know what kind of positions, you know, those hires that they're making are being slotted into and whether they're, you know, just kind of cycling right back out?
I mean, that's what it seems like. You know, I don't know specifically like what their titles are, what their, you know, job duties are, but I mean, answering the phones for people that are calling.
They're desperate.
And because people are calling with different issues, there's people that have general questions and there's people that have these very specific and highly complicated questions. Mm-hmm. And I remember at the beginning of the pandemic, EDD was, you know, desperately hiring people for the call center, but then it was taking people that were really experienced to train the new people. So then when the people called with really specific questions, those trained people didn't have the capacity to like hop on the phone with them. And it just like recreated the cycle. And I don't know if they're still doing this, but earlier on, the new employees had this like 800-page manual they had to go through. And like, and I think they've taken steps to streamline that, but the turnover is just, It's mind-boggling, and it's actually interesting because one of the lawmakers, when they heard this 30% figure, they said, well, I actually think we should consider hero pay for EDD workers, you know, the same as for grocery workers, because we need to have some sort of incentive to keep those people there, because otherwise the amount of time you're spending retraining people and hiring people and interviewing people that could have been going toward helping the people who are calling. Right. The legislators were very clear to EDD. They're like, we want to help you. So tell us what you want us to do to make this better, and we will try to do it.
And what did they say from EDD?
You know, they were like, yeah, we appreciate that. I actually was surprised that they didn't take them up more on that offer at that point in time. And, you know, maybe that's another discussion that they're having behind the scenes. But I thought the idea of hero pay was really interesting. And it does sort of seem like, I mean, I know those people are under immense stress. I know it's probably not, you know, it's probably a very intense job and not enjoyable necessarily. Yeah. And you kind of feel helpless to help people if you're not able to. Mm. And I do hope that, you know, the EDD considers those avenues that appear to be open to them.
I'm speaking with Emily Hoven, a reporter who writes the daily What Matters newsletter for the nonprofit news organization Cal Matters. So on the bright side, the department has fully or partially implemented the majority of recommendations from that auditor's office, including adding features to the call center and cracking down on identity fraud. But it also at the same time seems like things are getting worse from what you've said. So why are things getting worse?
I think a lot of it just generally goes back to this infrastructure problem.
Yeah.
The department is just operating on this technology that is so outdated. And I think in a lot of ways, the people that are working in EDD are smart. You know, you listen to them at the hearings, they're smart people. They want to make a difference. They want to get people their money. But I think a lot of times, and this is just from what I've, you know, sort of read about and reported and seen and listened to, it seems that they're constrained by the system that they're working with. Way back when, the governor appointed a strike team to kind of go in and look at EDD and say, okay, what can we do to make this better? And the strike team found that EDD years ago had started this process to modernize this technology. But after like years had passed, it still had not even chosen a contractor to come in and like recode the system and get everything up to speed. And so the strike team recommended just stop that modernization process altogether, because by the time you finish it, it's going to be outdated.
Oh no.
We're kind of back to square one. And the governor in his recent budget proposal did propose allocating, you know, I believe around millions of dollars to rejuvenate that process and modernize the infrastructure of EDD. But it's going to take I don't know how they're going to do that, because it seems like at the same time they have to address what they're working on right now. And the Sacramento Bee recently reported that their workload would take 3.5 years to complete fully, even as they're handling the other things that are going on with the pandemic related claims. So it's just sort of like, how do you build a new ship while you're in the old one, but you still need to do things in the old one?
And didn't legislators also look at that proposal and say, yeah, no thanks, we don't think that more bureaucracy is going to solve our bureaucracy problem?
Yeah, so the governor, that was a slightly different proposal.
Oh,
the governor also wanted to, he had proposed creating this Department of Higher Wages and Better Jobs, which is sort of unclear what exactly that would do. I mean, I think obviously it would be there to promote higher wages and better jobs, but how precisely it would do that is kind of unclear. But the legislature basically said, okay, yeah, that sounds good, but how is that going to help people get basic money? And I think part of the reason why they didn't like that proposal too was because it would have actually taken some of the people working at EDD and transferred them into this new department. And they were saying, well, you really shouldn't do that because they don't even have enough people as it is to handle all of the workload that they have. So that, they recommended rejecting that proposal. And we will see, with this budget, they're currently negotiating Newsom's budget proposal, and we'll see if they like what he proposed for EDD. Mm-hmm. I know some people have said it needs more money. Others, primarily GOP lawmakers, have said throwing money at it's not going to help. As you can tell, we tried to change this years ago, nothing even happened. And so, and there's also a lot of consternation around the fact that another aspect of this unemployment thing is this unemployment insurance debt. California has borrowed, over $20 billion from the federal government to pay this unemployment insurance, right? And normally that insurance fund, that's funded by employers.
Yeah, by businesses.
And as it is right now, they're on the hook to pay back that entire loan, even though many businesses themselves are obviously
struggling
with the pandemic.
Mm.
Newsom had proposed using $950 million to pay down part of that loan, but that's going to still leave, $19 billion minimum. So I think some lawmakers said you should have given more money to help pay down that loan rather than leaving that for the businesses to pay back. And they just finished paying back, by the way, the loan from the Great Recession for the unemployment insurance fund.
God. Oh, dear. So basically, everybody's in trouble and state needs to find some more money. Is that an accurate summation?
Yeah, it's money. Yeah, I mean, money is the issue. I mean, and again, it's back to what we were talking about at the beginning. It's who pays for what? Yeah. Who's going to be ultimately responsible for all of this and picking people up off their feet? And I don't know. It's a staggering problem. I do think EDD is just, I feel for them. Like I said, I mean, they have kind of an impossible task. At the same time, you can't help but say, hey, things should be getting better and they're not. Mm. So it's a really tough pill to swallow.
Yeah. Well, there's another huge sum of money here that I want to talk about. When we last talked, estimates of how much the state might have paid out in fraudulent unemployment claims were really just exploding. I think I had read $10 billion, but you were seeing estimates of multiple times that. What has transpired on the fraudulent payments front since February, which is the last time we had this conversation? Is that figure still growing?
It's a good question. Interestingly, there hasn't really been a lot of discussion about that. There hasn't been a lot of new developments on that. I believe the latest figure they had pegged was around $31 billion. That's still a projection. I mean, they're still going through. I mean, the governor actually, he has a task force out there to address fraud. And I think they had arrested around 30 people and they opened another 1,600 cases. Whoa. So it kind of underscores that the problem, it's definitely still going on, but they're still trying to ascertain how much money was actually fraudulently taken. And those processes take a lot of time. Another player in this was, Bank of America. They give out the debit cards that people use to access their unemployment claims. And, Bank of America was sued by a bunch of Californians who were not able to access their money because those cards were frozen because of, you know, potentially they could have been fraudulent or people were using them in the wrong way. And so, you know, that lawsuit is moving forward. And I think there was a preliminary sort of result, which was like, yeah, you know, Bank of America might also be on the hook for some of that money to pay back to people after it was taken fraudulently. So there's a lot of different players involved here, but I just definitely think that the main takeaway is they're still kind of hunting everybody down. I mean, just the other day, I think several USPS workers were arrested for EDD fraud. So, it kind of runs the gamut. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. I had a conversation with actually Assemblyman David Chu after our conversation most recently about EDD, talking about how this whole system could potentially change because of the difficulties that have come out of the payment system wherein Bank of America distributes these cards. I wanted to ask you about fun, frightening example of, I guess you would call this fraud on fraud, but Californians are now getting scam text messages alerting them that their Bank of America prepaid EDD debit card, which is a real thing, has been temporarily suspended and that they should click a link to reactivate the card. I have gotten two of these. I have not followed the link, but that seems cunning. And you know, like David Chu warned about this when it first started happening. I can really, really see myself falling for that. Have you been hearing anything about how people are being affected by these scams?
Yeah, I mean, I know that that is going on, and EDD, you know, issued a warning, I believe last week, saying there's like this spear phishing attack where they're sending out these text messages that are, basically the fraud on the fraud. I don't know, you know, who's behind that or what the scope of it is, but there have been a lot of kind of warnings about that type of development going on. And I agree. I mean, I think it is, how would you know if it's real or not? And I think EDD on their website has a couple of ways that you can kind of figure out if you're receiving actual communications from them.
One more note on the topic of text message scams. A May 10th release from the EDD says that, quote, EDD only sends text messages from the number 510-74 or 918-06. Customers should be aware, however, that a scammer might attempt to fake this number to trick someone, unquote. It also says that, quote, Bank of America and EDD never text message people to reactivate a debit card, end quote. Okay, back to Emily.
It's a scary prospect, and there are a lot of different ways to kind of manipulate the system, and it kind of just makes you aware of how vulnerable in some ways, like, we all are, and this process is so opaque to so many people, and EDD is really trying to streamline, you know, how you verify yourself, how you get your money, how you verify you're talking to EDD. But it's sort of, you know, for me, it makes you think, who do you trust and how, right. You know, how do you figure it out?
And if you can't get through to the actual EDD, what are you going to do?
Exactly. If you don't have the time to like have that communication or get on the phone or wait, how are you going to know? And then if you're desperate, you're going to click the link. You're going to think, oh my gosh, like, I don't want, you know, something to happen. And then it's just a whole other can of worms.
Oh boy. Well, okay. So we've talked a lot about the remaining problems, but it does seem like work is being done. People have been hired. Audits have been made. You know, the strike team has been formed. Recommendations have been implemented. Do you get the sense that claimants are starting to see the benefit of things improving?
It's a good question. I mean, it's tough to say because I think the vast majority of people who I talk to about EDD have really profoundly negative experiences. But I do think, you know, I do think EDD has taken a lot of steps. And, you know, one aspect of that is like identity fraud. And this was a really big concern for people because they were getting, you know, tax. They were going to have to pay taxes on claims that they themselves didn't file. Yeah. And EDD has taken a lot of steps to really address that and make sure that that's not going to be a problem for them. And so, yeah, I mean, I think claimants are aware that EDD is doing everything they can. And one thing they also did was at the call center, they did this thing where you basically can leave yourself in the line to reach someone without having to be on the phone yourself the whole time. Yeah. And they'll call you back when you're ready. So they are taking steps, and I do think people are seeing that, but again, I think in the situation, when it's bad, it's really bad. And so that's kind of the narrative that seems to, you know, come across the clearest when I talk to jobless Californians.
Yeah, absolutely. Emily, thanks so much for all of this reporting that you're doing and for talking with me about it again.
Thanks so much for having me. It's always great to talk with you.
That was Emily Hoven, who writes the What Matters newsletter for CalMatters. Find her reporting at calmatters.org. I'm Laura Wenis, and you've been listening to Civic. Civic is produced at KSFP LP 102.5 FM in San Francisco. Our theme music is by John Dillon. Our team includes producer and contributor Mel Baker and assistant producer Liana Wilcox. KSFP is a project of the San Francisco Public Press, a nonprofit investigative newsroom. Find our reporting at sfpublicpress.org.